Hi, welcome to Color Speak. I'm Janet Huxley, JM Huxley, and I'm here with a fantastic story of hope for you today. I'm telling you, this is going to rock your world. It has mine, because Natalie Valcarcel is back with me, and she's been with me before, and I just couldn't wait to have her back, and she has graciously agreed to join me from her home near Las Vegas, Nevada. Back when we talked last time, she was living in my neck of the woods in Kansas, but that was just about 2 years ago. And so I asked her, hey, would you come back now that we're doing more than just the audio thing? We've moved into the video segmenting here. And I just really, you know, let me just say before I introduce Valerie and have her tell her story, I have interviewed and had the privilege and the pleasure of talking with well over 100 women at this point. I've lost count in the 4 years we've been doing this. And Natalie's story stands out to me as one of the most significant. And I always say we overcome our adversary by the blood of the Lamb and the word of our testimony. And what you will hear today from Natalie is going to help propel you into just greater faith, depth of perception. Hopelessness will fade, because hope will really just be something that you can lean on when you hear this story. Because I have found myself, Natalie, over the years thinking of you time and time again and thinking, you know what, if Natalie can have that kind of faith and prove her God true, well, then certainly I can. So without further ado, Natalie, welcome to the show again. It's so good to see you.
Thanks so much. I'm happy to be here.
So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I was born and raised in California, and I didn't come from a typical Christian home. My mom got saved when I was 5 years old, and that's when I started going to church as a child. My dad was not saved, and still not saved to this day. So it was wasn't a typical Christian home. My mom, you know, tried her very best to raise us up in the Lord, as she had an amazing experience in knowing God. And so it wasn't very typical. When I was 16, that is when I gave my whole heart to the Lord. And from there, I just kept growing and growing in Him. And so that's kind of my little beginning. There's also more to that, but I don't want to
Just thinking about how your faith absolutely grew. It is a faith that will shatter what people think about faith, in my opinion. So let's get into that part of it. I love that you mentioned your mom, because I know that your mom was a big part of the blessing, the prophecy that she prayed over you at your wedding.
Yeah. So when my husband and I got married, my mom insisted on speaking a blessing over us. And I told her that was fine. I didn't even care to know what the blessing was. But it was something that she wanted herself, my dad, my husband's mom and dad, to all speak over me and my husband. So I let her do it. And, you know, it was a nice thing that she did. It didn't even know the significance of it at that time until later, when the Lord brought it back to memory again. So, she's very special.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to having you talk about that. So the story that is so significant in terms of, I mean, there are always going to be significant stories in all of our lives, but the one that I would love to have you talk about today happened just after you got engaged or married. I can't remember.
After I got married. Actually, a week before I got married, I found out that I had a fibroid tumor on my uterus. And at that time, I asked the doctor if it would affect me getting pregnant, that I was getting married. You know, we wanted to have a family. And my doctor said, no, at that time, it wouldn't affect that. So the next week, my husband and I got married, and I just didn't worry about having a fibroid tumor. The doctor didn't seem to be concerned about it. Mm-hmm. Well, a few months after being married, I started feeling that tumor when I really didn't feel it before, and it started getting uncomfortable. So I asked the doctor if she could remove the tumor, and she agreed to do that. And when I was in surgery to get it removed, she realized I could not have it removed, that the tumor was completely enveloping my uterus and that I would have to have a hysterectomy done. She knew that I wasn't expecting to have a hysterectomy with that surgery. So she went out to my husband and told him that she could not remove the tumor and that I would need a hysterectomy. And if he would give permission to go ahead with that, and she knew that I wasn't expecting that. And he said, no, don't do it. I want to talk to her first. So after surgery, I found out that they weren't able to remove the tumor. And the doctor let me know at that time that it was impossible for me to have children, to not to hold on to any hope of that, that we had to do this hysterectomy, that the tumor was much bigger than what they thought. And that it was enveloping my uterus. Like she said, it was impossible. And wanted to start the process of doing the hysterectomy right away. Well, I told her, I said, you know, I really need to pray about this first. I can't just say, okay, let's go. Let's do this hysterectomy. I said, I need to pray. I said, can you give me a few days to pray? And she said, okay. So I went to the Lord in prayer and I just asked him, what do you want to do here, Lord? Is it your will for me to have have children? Is it not your will for me to have children? What's going on here? What do you want to do here? And so I was really wanting to hear from the Lord. So I put away my phone. I turned off the TV and I sat on the couch the whole day intentionally to hear the Lord. I needed to hear from him. So that whole day, I didn't hear from him at all. Even though my ears were open to hear, he did not speak.
Can I just interject that? Because I know there's so many women that resonates with. They're saying, okay, yeah, that's what it takes. That's what I hear. You have to get alone with the Lord and you have to wait on him and to hear from him. And so often, my friends and I talk about this, it feels like he doesn't show up.
Yeah. He's quiet. He seems non-existent in that moment, you know, and you're like, God, you know, I have a serious situation. You know, I need to hear from you. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't hear from him that whole day. And that night when I went to bed, when I laid my head, right when my head hit the pillow, I heard, be fruitful and multiply. And I just, in that moment, I thought, okay, you know, like I've heard that before, but it seemed kind of generic to me, to be honest. I just thought, that's kind of generic. And I was just like, be fruitful.
Very scriptural.
Yeah, like, okay, you know, but I went to sleep on that. Mm-hmm. And when I woke up in the morning, it was the first thing I heard again, be fruitful and multiply. And so I went to the Bible and I looked up everywhere where it said to be fruitful and multiply. And just reading that in the Word, it made me realize that God has called us to be fruitful and to multiply, that he has commanded it, that it is a word that he has spoken over us as women to be fruitful and multiply, you know, as well as other things, you know, animals and, you right. know, fruit, our trees and, you know, all those things. We're called to be fruitful and multiply. He wants to see a return in what he's invested into us. So I said, okay, Lord, I now know that it is your will for me to have children. And because you actually spoke it to me, I feel that you're saying be fruitful. It's a command that you're telling me. So I said, okay, I now know that it's your will for me to have children. But what
now, this is the part of the story uh-huh. that I want to highlight. Sure. Because you are so convinced at this point that this is what the Lord has said to you, that you're not going to doubt it and you're not going to act against it. And I just think so many times we may think we hear the Lord and we're not really sure. And there are other times where we just know that we know. And when you've heard from him like that, and that's something I have found he does typically, is when you think that you're looking for some big booming megaphone or voice behind a megaphone, that's not what happens. It's in some still small moment. And I've had great epiphanies just as I'm getting ready to go to sleep as well. Mm-hmm. I think that's when our defenses are down and we're more open to hearing him. Okay.
It's so true. And you know what? His voice is very easily dismissed as well, because mm-hmm. you think, oh, that's just me. Or, even my initial thought, like, that's kind of generic. Because, you know, when you hear the word over and over again, after a while, it's like you get numb to it. And it's just words. It doesn't have the power that it's supposed to have. And so I could have dismissed it and just thought, that's not the word I'm looking for. Mm-hmm. That's not the answer I'm looking for. And it's really saying, okay, Lord, I hear you. All right, I'm going to research that. I'm going to look into that, because I hear his voice. You know, we all do. And don't dismiss it.
Right.
Is that something? Just say, even if you're not sure, you know, research it, look into it. So I did that. I looked up be fruitful and multiply. And it made me realize that I am supposed to have children. So at that moment when I was like, okay, Lord, I know now that you want me to have children, but what do I do now? You know, I'm in this condition. It's impossible for me to have children. This is what the doctor is saying. She's saying I need to do a hysterectomy and I need to do it right away. Mm-hmm. What do I do now? And the Lord spoke in that moment. He said, read the story of Jacob. And when he spoke to me that, I thought, what does the story of Jacob have anything to do with me and my situation? It just seemed like, what? Mm. Again, I could have dismissed it. Mm-hmm. But I was obedient and I read the whole story of Jacob. And so as I was pondering after I read the story of Jacob, I was pondering it and I just was kind of just meditating on what really stood out to me. And what really stood out to me was Jacob knew the power of a blessing. He was very, he did whatever it took to get a blessing spoken over him. Not that what he did was completely right, but God actually valued the importance he put on words being spoken over him. And so even though he deceived his brother and even his father to have the blessing spoken over him, he knew if he could get that blessing spoken over him, it would happen for him. And even the 7 years he, you know, was hoping for that blessing of Leah and got, Rachel, the blessing of Rachel, and got Leah instead. And then he worked another 7 years to receive the blessing. Like, he would work hard. He, like, to have what, you know, just the blessing. And then, of course, when he wrestled with God and he was just like, I need you to bless me, and fought with him all night long until he blessed him. So that stood out to me after reading the whole story. And so I started thinking, what kind of blessings have been spoken over me? And I was like, I don't think any blessings have been spoken over me. And I was like, I couldn't think of any thing that was spoken over me. And all of a sudden the Lord spoke again and he said, your wedding blessing. And I was like, my wedding blessing? I'm like, what was that? I didn't know. I was like, my mom, they spoke it over us, but I didn't even care to know what they spoke over us. I just said, okay, because my mom insisted on it.
Right. You were caught up in the moment. You were getting married, whatever you want, mom. Right.
Dude, that's nice, whatever. And so I called her and I said, Mom, I was like, what was that blessing? What was that blessing you spoke over us at the wedding? And she's like, oh, it was Psalm 128. And I was like, oh my God. So then I look up, you know, Psalm 128, and it just spoke loud and clear to me. It said that that your wife will be a fruitful vine in the innermost parts of her home, and she will see her children around her table like olive plants. And at the very latter part of that chapter, it says that we will see our children's children. And so I was like, oh my gosh, that is for me. And so I clung on to that blessing, just like Jacob clung on to his blessings and said, this is for me, and I'm not letting this go. And so that started my 5-year journey of believing in the impossible.
5 years. Okay. Mm-hmm. There's so much to unpack there. Excuse me. Just the beauty of understanding the blessing. How many of us do that? You know, this is the second go around for us where you're telling me your story. And I'm thinking to myself, have I also ever had a blessing spoken over me? I don't know. But being mindful of that as a mom and now a grandmother, how incredibly wonderful is that and powerful is that to understand that? And the other thing is just knowing that you've heard the voice of the Lord, which we've already talked about. And I've had whole podcast episodes on how to do that. And you're just illustrating it so beautifully. You hear something, you know that you know, you affirm that, which I think is part of it. So then you take that affirmation that you've heard and you take that blessing concurrently and that's then prophecy to you. That's how it works.
Yeah.
And I love seeing that. How encouraging. Okay, so the 5-year journey begins at this point, and this is wild. So listen to this, people, because Natalie is extremely special. Like, I don't know, to be honest, if I could have done it, you know, what you had to go through.
Honestly, I don't even know how I did it. It was the Lord. And I, you know, my strength comes from him. I really do feel like he gifted me with a gift of faith to get through.
Yeah.
But just to tell you what I went through. So after realizing I had a blessing that I could cling on to and that God honors blessings from our mothers, our fathers, you know, he honors that. I was still in the same condition. It wasn't like all of a sudden, poof, my tumor's gone, you know, just because I clung onto, you know, a blessing that I just realized I had. It didn't happen that way. Actually, on the contrary, the tumor began to grow and it got bigger and bigger. And every time I went to the doctor, I would see the doctor every 6 months just to check on the tumor. Because in my mind, the doctor was going to confirm a miracle. And I needed to continue to see the doctor to for the miracle to be confirmed. And so...
So are you talking about at this point, you're thinking at some point your miracle is going to be that you're pregnant?
Or the tumor is shrinking and then all of a sudden disappears. Okay. You know, like I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know how the Lord was going to do this.
They told you that you couldn't get pregnant at this point, that it was an impossibility statistically with the tumor in the way. Okay.
It was impossible. You know, and year after year, I wasn't getting pregnant. And the tumor was getting bigger. It wasn't getting smaller. And I was looking like I was pregnant, even though I wasn't pregnant, because the tumor just kept growing.
Yeah.
And so my doctor, you know, every time I went, she would say, you know, you really have to do this hysterectomy. I don't want to find you in the emergency room with your life on the line, because this tumor is not getting any smaller. It's getting bigger and it's growing. And I would just tell her, I'm still praying. I'm still waiting on a miracle from God. I said, he promised me children. So I'm clinging on to that, you know, and I was very honest with her. That's what I'm believing for.
Right.
And she would just be like, you know, okay. She was patient with me. She was, and I was grateful for that, because I needed her to be patient with me and bear this with me. So she told me that I, you know, looked like her pregnant patients, her 6-month pregnant patients. And you know, every time I went to the Lord about it, and I would go to him about hysterectomy, I said, Lord, do I do this hysterectomy? Every time he would say no. He would say no before I even asked. Like, he knew I was going to ask.
Right.
And I just was like, okay, it's no. And so I'm like, Lord, I just need your word. And he would just reaffirm in his word that he was going to follow through no matter what. Actually, there was one time where I was really praying because I really needed the encouragement and the need to just keep going because it wasn't a comfortable situation. And the Lord took me to Galatians 4. I think it's Galatians 4. Let me just verify that real quick. Mm-hmm. Galatians 4, when I read this, I was like, oh my gosh, God is going to do this. I don't know how, and I don't know in what way, mm-hmm. but he is going to do this.
I love how he does that. I love how he'll tell you something, and then you'll find it in the word, and it's specifically because it is the living word. It applies to you every bit as much as it did whoever it was written about thousands of years ago. And in that moment, you have that, aha, this is what he's saying to me. This is my promise too.
Right.
And it's so wild.
It's crazy. And I wasn't even looking for this. It was like, I just happened on it. And I know it was the Lord leading me because I was always going to his word to get some kind of encouragement. Some kind of just something to get me through so that I continue in faith.
Yeah.
And he brought this to me and spoke to me so deeply that I was just like, oh my goodness, this is big. But it is Galatians 4, and it starts with verse 22, and it talks about the covenant. Actually, not necessarily the covenant, but about the bondwoman and the free woman, Abraham's wife, Sarah, mm-hmm. and Hagar. So this is what it says. It says, for it is written that Abraham had two sons, the one by a bondwoman and the other by a free woman. But he who was of the bondwoman was born according to the flesh. And he of the free woman through the promise, which things are symbolic, for these are two covenants. It is covenants. The one from Mount Sinai, which gives birth to bondage, which is Hagar. For this Hagar is Mount Sinai in Arabia and corresponds to Jerusalem, which now is and is in bondage with her children. But the Jerusalem above is free, which is the mother of us all. For it is written, rejoice, O barren, you who do not bear, break forth and shout, you who are not in labor, for the desolate has many more children than she who has a husband. Now we, brethren, as Isaac was, are children of promise. But as he who was born according to the flesh, then persecuted him who was born according to the spirit. Even so is now. Okay, so the Lord spoke to me in that moment, and he told me, you are the free woman, and your child is going to be born according to the promise, just like Sarah. Mm-hmm. And so that spoke to me so deeply because it made me realize, and this is for any woman who is, you know, a child of God, we are free. Because of Christ Jesus and what he's done. And yes. Because of that, we have a promise in him. Mm. And he had promised me a child or children. And that he was going to follow through. Mm. And so that just confirmed to me that he was going to follow through, that I am that free woman, and that I'm not going to have this according to natural circumstances, according to the flesh, but I was going to have this according to the spirit, how the spirit leads and what the spirit does. It's going to be a very different situation than just the natural way of how things are done, that it was going to be all him, all spirit, and it was going to be done in that way. So it was just like, okay, Lord, I'm going to continue in faith.
And I just want to interrupt and just say, for those listening, watching in, that this is not just an easy, well, of course, it wouldn't be easy, but it's not just an emotional or mental commitment you're making. Because at this point, you are actually very uncomfortable and you're suffering. So it would be one thing to say, okay, well, I am waiting for this promise and life goes on as it generally does. But you're suffering physically, you're in pain. And I'm assuming there is some emotional pain too, as people are looking at you and asking when you're due, as your stomach grows.
Yeah. So that, you know, I really feel like the Lord, and I think this is why it took 5 years. The Lord was developing me in this time, you know, and trusting in Him and standing with Him no matter what, and not to allow people to shake me. Because in this time, of course, I looked like I was pregnant. So people were like, oh, you know, I didn't know you were pregnant. What do you do? And, you know, I got that all the time. And I'd be like, oh, I'm not pregnant. You know, I have a tumor. I said, but I'm believing God for a promise. And I said, and I know He's going to follow through, and that, you know, I'm believing Him that I'm going to have a child. And this is why I'm not getting a hysterectomy to get it removed. And so I would just
also add, you are a very small woman. So it wasn't as if you could hide it.
Mm-mm. I couldn't hide. No, there was no hiding it. And yeah, that's why, you know, I was asked that all the time. And you know what? You know, on those same very lines of just, you know, having to emotionally push through this, I even have family members who were like, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. Like, why don't you listen to the doctors? The doctors, you know, like the doctors know what's best. You know, you can adopt. You can, you know, children are not all cracked up to be what, you know, like, you know, just enjoy your life, you know, just get the hysterectomy, you know, you're miserable. And I even had my husband's grandmother come to the door one day, and she knocked on my door, and I answered it, and she says, I need to talk to you. And I was like, okay. And she came in and she said, you need to get that hysterectomy. You know, she says, this is not God, what you're doing. This is not God. And then she told me about how she got a hysterectomy and how, you know, she wanted children too. She never had children, but she has stepchildren, at which she calls her children. And she said, that's what God wanted for her. And, so I just needed to follow the doctors, you know, because God gives us doctors, and that's, you know, that's just what you do. You know, the Lord has given us doctors and their wisdom, and I just need to follow wisdom, and that I just need to do the hysterectomy. And I said, you know, I told her, thank you for sharing your story. Cause she had told me that, after her surgery, that, she saw angels around her bed, and that she, felt like she had, you know, done the right thing, that the Lord was with her. And, you know, so it was a nice, you know, story, and that was for her, and thank God, you know, for that. But I told her, but that's not how God is leading me. I said, God is leading me to wait on Him on a promise that He's given me. And she left upset. She left up really upset. She told me, she's like, what's wrong with you? And left. So, you know, you'll be challenged by your family. Mm-hmm. My dad, not being a Christian, just thought I was ridiculous. You know, your faith is going to be tested on all angles. And are you going to, you know, are you going to just please your family? Or are you going to please God? You know, you have to make that decision for yourself. At the time, I spent a lot of time with the Lord in His word and in prayer, and I was confident that I was going in the right direction, even though in the natural, it looked dumb. It did. It looked dumb in the natural, but God's like, nope, you hang on to me and we'll see what I'll do.
Well, I would argue that in your walk in life, there is going to be at least one occasion where you will have to stand by your faith to the ridicule or consternation or whatever, to varying degrees, that you will suffer from family members and friends. That's the course of it. So yes. I can imagine this would have been extremely difficult.
Yeah, it was hard. I had to take up the challenge. I knew that these things were going to happen and come, and I knew these are things that I had to really stay in the Word and just in prayer. Otherwise, I would have given in to them. It's when it's your family, they care about you. They don't want to see you hurting or suffering, and I understand that. But the Lord was giving me the strength at the time. So I talking about how miserable I was, I'll kind of give you an idea of what that was like. So because the tumor kept growing, I got to a point where I couldn't breathe. I had a hard time breathing. I couldn't, sorry about that.
Oh, I figured it was mine. It's usually mine. So no worries.
So I couldn't breathe very well. I couldn't sit down for a long period of time. I couldn't stand up for a long period of time. It started affecting me at work, and I couldn't drive for a long period of time because I couldn't just sit for that long. It was hard to take breaths, just because the tumor was kind of pressing up against my ribs, and, it became very difficult. I'd wake up in the middle of the night because it would hit my a nerve in my back every once in a while, and I'd wake up screaming, and I would be like frozen, and I would have to move as slow as possible to try to get out of bed to walk it out. So it was hitting nerves. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't sit down. I couldn't stand up. I couldn't lay down flat. I had to kind of sit up in like a recliner and sleep that way. I was holding out. I was really holding out, and I got to the point where I was having a really hard time working, and I couldn't work really anymore. It was affecting me too much. So I go back to the doctor, and I told the doctor, can I get on disability? 'Cause this is, like just for a couple of weeks so I can just spend time with the Lord and just pray this through. And she was just like,
yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah.
As a healthcare professional, what she was saying to you.
She was just, because, here I am already, almost 5 years. And she was like, she says, I'm going to give you a week disability. No. Yeah. A week disability. And she says, and that's it. She says, you're doing this hysterectomy. She says, I just, there's nothing you can do. She says, maybe this is the very thing that's going to make you do this. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay. I said, can I go home and pray about it? A little bit so that I can just hear from God on this. And she was just like, you've been praying for 4.5 years. You've been praying, she's like, okay, And so this
that's always your response.
Like,
it's so beautiful. That's what it should be.
And you know
every
what?
Single thing we need to take to the throne room to put at his feet and to ask him about it. And I just think it's, wow, what a great testimony that you just kept doing that and you didn't give up.
To the world, it looks like foolishness.
Right.
But to us, who know him and trust him, it's our life. Like he controls our life. He decides what I do and what I don't do. So I was just like, I need to know what he has to say about this again, because in my head too, I'm thinking, what else do I do? Like, hysterectomy is actually sounding really great right now. Like, to me, like I was like, I don't even care if I have children. Like, I don't even care. At this point, like, I just want to be done out of this misery, like it would have been way easier to do that hysterectomy than to hold out as long as I did.
Well, and I'm sure he took you right up to your breaking point.
He did.
You were in your 11th hour when things turned.
And you know what? I found that's how he works. You know, it's almost like a testing period. Like, are you gonna believe me? You know, all the way. And then you do have the enemy coming. Like, do you really believe what you think you believe?
Yeah. Did you hear?
Or do you, you know, really believe that God really spoke to you these things? You know, like, you get tested from every angle, and you just have to be like, I know what God said. Right. You know, and I don't know how he's going to do this. I don't know in what way, but he's going to do it. I don't know how, but he's going to do it. So that was a Friday when I was at the doctor's, and she gave me the disability for a week. And she also had told me about, you know, we need to get this hysterectomy. So that was a Friday. I went home, immediately fell on my knees before the Lord and gave it to him. And I said, Lord, what do I do with this? I don't know what to do. You know, I'm in a place where I don't even care anymore. I don't even care. Like, I want my life back, because my life was not great being in this condition. So, that was a Friday, fell on my knees, prayed until I got peace. Saturday came and went. Sunday came. Now, on Monday, I'm supposed to reach out to my doctor to set up the whole hysterectomy. So I had the weekend to pray, and then at Monday to set it up with her. And so Sunday came, and I was in the church parking lot in my car, sitting in my car in the church parking lot. And I decided to bring it to the Lord again and just was talking to him about it. And the Lord spoke to me. He told me, you will have a child, and you will have three. And this is how you'll know. The pastor will confirm it to you today. He said it just like that. And I said, okay, well, it'll be just as you said. So I get out of the car. I walk into the sanctuary.
Such a Mary posture. Chokes me up.
And, you know, and this is not a church that is, you know, very charismatic either. So it's not like, you know, the pastor's given words, you know, to everybody. You know, it's not like, you know, like, for the pastor to confirm it is like, wow, this would be God if, you know, this pastor confirms it, right? And we were new at this church. We'd only been there for a couple of months. So it wasn't like the pastor knew my situation. He didn't even know my condition. So I go into the church, I sit down where I normally sit. The pastor is shaking people's hands. He came over, shook my hand, just like he shook everybody else's hand, and he went on his way. Church started. He did his sermon. And at the end of the sermon, he pauses for a moment. And he says, the Lord is asking you to do something right now. And he says earlier this morning, he says, the Lord spoke to me, and he says, and I asked the Lord, oh no, he said earlier this morning when I was shaking people's hand, he says, when I shook, how did he say it? Let me go back. Let me remember exactly how he said it. He said, I'm going to do something a little different this morning. He says, the Lord is telling me to tell someone something that he spoke to me. And he said that this has happened to him three times before. And he said, and that is somebody's going to get pregnant. And he says, in the three times that this has happened, where he spoke, that the Lord had spoken to him that someone was going to get pregnant, he says it happened within a few months after him giving the word. And he said only in one case, it took a year before that person got pregnant. And he says, this morning, when I shook this girl's hand, he says, the Lord said pregnant. And I asked the Lord, do I tell her now? And he said, the Lord said, no, don't tell her now. He says, tell her when I tell you to tell her. And he says, and the Lord is telling me to tell her now. And he looked over to me and he pointed to me and he says, Natalie, this is you. And he says, and the Lord is saying right now, nothing's impossible with him. So I stood up and I said, "The Lord told me you would confirm this to me today." And he said, "Come up here. What did the Lord tell you?" And so I told them my situation, and the Lord had told me that he would, that the pastor would confirm this to me today, that he was, that I was going to have a child. So, so 4 months after that, I got pregnant, which
canceled your Monday. I can imagine what your doctor thought at that point.
Oh gosh. So on that Monday, so of course that was my confirmation. You know, the Lord again came through at the very last minute, you know, he came through. And that Monday I emailed the doctor and all I said was, "I'm not doing the hysterectomy." And I just sent it. Okay. So I'm still in this condition. Okay. I'm not like all of a sudden miraculously, like I'm better, you know, like I still can't breathe. I still can't sit down for a long period of time. You know, I can't still, like, I'm still in this condition and I'm like, you know, like, how do I continue on? And so I had, so I took a week of disability. I took a week of sick time, and then it was Christmas time. And so we were already given a week at that time. And then on New Year's, on New Year's Day, I woke up and the tumor wasn't affecting me like it was affecting me. Like I could breathe all of a sudden. I could sit down for a long period of time. I could stand up for a long period of time. I noticed this right when I woke up on New Year's. And I was still, you know, still had the tumor, still in the same condition, but I was able to breathe okay and stand up okay. And I was able to go back to work. And I went back to work and I was good. So still not pregnant at that moment. And so in so February came and went. And then March, I had a really bad, bad period. My period was really bad. And one of the graces I felt that the Lord had given me is that my periods weren't so bad, which is a symptom of having a fibroid. When you have fibroids, your menstrual cycle is really off and can be very heavy. And mine was very regular and it wasn't heavy like people with fibroids usually have. But this particular one was super heavy. And I felt like passing out. It was just, it was bad. So I went to the Lord and I said, "Lord, what," I said, "one of the graces I've always felt you've given me is having periods that weren't so heavy and awful." And I said, "This one's really bad." And I said, "And I just come to you right now and ask you for help." And the Lord spoke to me in that moment. He said, "This will be your last period." So I was like, "Oh." So I go to my husband. So I was in my bedroom, you know, when the Lord told me that. And I go to my husband who was watching TV and I said, "This will be my last period." And he said, he was like, "Okay." And he was just kind of like, "Okay.
Champ, let me tell you, up until this and beyond."
Yeah.
I just put feet, I've thought this every time I hear your story, that you have to have an award-winning husband that is willing to go the distance with you throughout this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's great.
So and the reason why I told him I needed to say it out loud so that when it happened, you know, the Lord, you know, like the Lord told me.
Yeah.
So it was my last period. I had told my Bible study too. And when I went to my Bible study, I was, so I told my Bible study what the Lord had told me. And the next, in April, when April came, I went to Bible study and I wasn't feeling quite right. I felt like, "Oh my God, what's wrong with me? What's wrong with me?" And they were like, "You said that the Lord said this was going to be your last period. Maybe you should get a pregnancy test." And I was like, "Yeah, I know I said that. But I don't know." Like, I was emotionally weird. Like,
well, that's usually the way things go when you're pregnant, especially the first time. And you don't know what's happening to you.
I don't know what's happening. I'm like, "Oh my gosh, am I dying?" Like, it was weird. I felt so weird. So my husband So the next day, it was my birthday, and my husband wanted to take me out. And so we go to this really nice restaurant, and, you know, he's all excited and happy to celebrate my birthday. And I'm just like, can we go home? Like, I don't want to be here. And he was just like, why? It's your birthday. Let's celebrate. And I said, no. He said, I just want to go home. And he said, but before we go home, can we get a pregnancy test? And he's like, what? A pregnancy test? And I said, yeah, I just need to know. And he said, okay. And this was the first and only pregnancy test that I took. Like, I didn't take it within any of the years, you know, prior. And so he's like, okay. So I go and I take the test, and it was positive. And I was like, oh my gosh. So I was laughing because, you know, just like Sarah, like now I know why Sarah laughed, because it's just so like God came through, and this is such a miracle. And he said he would do it, and look, he did it. And it was just like, I was laughing. Like, I wasn't even crying. I just kept like giggling and laughing, because it was just like, I just now know why Isaac's name is Laughter, because that's like, you just keep laughing, because it's just like, wow, this is so miraculous. So I emailed my doctor and I said, guess what? I said, I got a miracle.
You're not out of the woods yet.
Yeah. So, and she says, well, I'm all for miracles, but let's get you tested. Let's, you know, make sure this is not a tubal pregnancy. Let's just like make sure this is, you know, a happy thing, not a serious thing. And so I went in and they verified that I was pregnant. She says, I don't even know how you got pregnant, because the embryo was up here in my left side. Because I was all tumor, and here was a little embryo. And she's like, I don't even know how you got pregnant. She says, you must have a direct line to God, because what I see is impossible, even for you to conceive, and how it's been conceived, impossible. And so she verified. When it came to the point to hear the heartbeat, we all gasped, the doctor, you know, me, my husband, like, it was just, whoa, this is real. But the tumor kept growing. I still had this tumor. The tumor, you know, in my mind, I thought, okay, the Lord's going to have to dissolve this tumor in some way for, you know, to make this miracle happen, because the tumor was the thing that was standing in the way. But the Lord had chosen to keep the tumor there and have the baby there. And it made me think of the wheat and the tares, you know, how
I think so too. Yeah.
You know, how he decided to let them grow together rather than to pluck them out. He says, no, let's grow them together. And in the end, we'll take the tares and throw them in the fire, and we'll take what is good. And so that's how I saw it. And I thought, okay, this is kind of a wheat and tares kind of a situation. So the tumor kept growing and the baby kept growing, and they were growing alongside together, one not of God and the other of God. Which, of course, the tumor was there and caused more complications. At 27 weeks, actually, my leg was hurting really bad, and it had been hurting for months now. And I had told the doctor my leg had been hurting, and he had told me, he says, well, he says, I don't know what it could be. He says, the only thing I can think it could be would be a blood clot. He says, but your leg doesn't look like a blood clot leg. So he kind of just ruled it out. So my leg hurt for a few months, and I finally, I was at my 27th week visit at the doctor. And when they did the ultrasound, they saw that my kidney was being severely compressed by the tumor. And so they admitted me into the hospital, and they're like, doesn't it hurt? And I was like, it didn't hurt at all. And, you know, the tumor's getting better, bigger, but I can breathe. I can walk. They couldn't believe how that I could even walk because I was so huge. And, but it didn't hurt me. And I said, but you know what does hurt me is my leg. Can you look at my leg? Because my leg really hurts me. My kidney doesn't hurt. And so they decided, since I was admitted into the hospital, let's do an ultrasound on your leg. And they found a blood clot in my leg. And it was from my knee all the way up to my groin, even past. They couldn't see how far it went because the tumor was hiding it. And at that point, my doctors were like, you're not going to live. They saw me as good as dead. I remember when the doctor came in to tell me that I had a blood clot, he had said that he had visited with about 30 doctors to get their advice on what he should do. And none of them knew what to do. And these were doctors from USC, UCLA. He says, these are high ranking doctors. And they said, what can we do that you couldn't, you know, what can we do that couldn't do? Like, there's nothing we can do. But there was one doctor who said, you know, I want to see what I can do. And she was the only one willing to take me on. And so by ambulance, they took me to Los Angeles. I was in Riverside, California at that time. And they put me in an ambulance to Los Angeles, to a hospital there. And this doctor took me on. And so I was put in ICU because they felt I could go at any moment. The doctor told me that this blood clot was like a bullet in a gun ready to go off. And he says, I don't see you living through this. He didn't even think I would live through the ambulance ride to the hospital.
So at this point, Natalie, you're not wavering on the birth of your child. So you knew that was your promise that you were clinging to. Did it occur to you at this point that perhaps though your child was guaranteed life, that you weren't?
So, you know, at this time, I really didn't know the gravity of the situation. And I chose not to. I didn't ask a lot of questions. Actually, I didn't ask any questions at all. Like I was hearing the doctors, but it wasn't holding any weight to me. It was holding weight to the rest of my family. My family was like freaking out. And I was just calm. Actually, even the doctor told me, what he said, he came to me and gave me a hug and he says, I don't want you to die. And he started crying. The doctor started crying and he told me, and I told the doctor, I said, Dr. Montgomery, I said, I did not come this far for it to end this way. The next time you see me, I will be holding my child tumor free. And he looked at me and he says, your faith. He says, look at you. You're as cool as a cucumber. He says, I wish I had faith like you. And I really believe that God gave me that faith and that strength. Now, when it came to concerning me, I don't know. I wasn't too concerned about dying. I just wasn't. And I don't know if it's because, I don't know. I just wasn't concerned. You know, now that I look back, I was like, why wasn't I concerned? I just wasn't. I think the Lord just, you know, you hear about missionaries and you think, gosh, you know, they put their lives on the line for the gospel. And, you know, you don't think you could ever do that, you know, but in the moment, God gives you the strength to do it.
Yeah.
And so
I would say that even just regarding birth, I have a daughter who's 31 weeks. And as she gets closer to her delivery date, there's a lot of talk, and I just feel like, not from her, but there are a lot of different people that have opinions about what it looks like or what they felt. And for me, I look back on that time whenever I would deliver my children, And I just kept thinking that in retrospect, I had no concerns. It was a place of complete trust. And I think maybe because you're so physically actively in the process of giving life to a human, that maybe that does take a lot of the thinking that you would have perhaps, but I was not concerned ever, even for the health of my children. Yeah. I just knew. Yeah.
You just know, you know, God gives you that peace and just, you just, I don't know. I just was not afraid of dying at all, even though this is what the doctors were saying. And so, I mean, I see you because I could go at any moment, you know, and I was there for 2 weeks.
When you say you could go at any moment, you're talking about you could either give birth and or the tumor could rupture and or the blood clot could kill you. So you've got three things happening all at once.
So it was really the blood clot and the tumor that, the baby, it would be impossible for me to deliver. Like she had to be cut out. I was carrying her in my left side, in my rib, I could feel her in my rib. So it just, the tumor was taking over everywhere else. Mm-hmm. And so, when I was in the ICU though, I had an angel moment, and I don't know if I remember telling you about my angel moments. I had two angel moments. One was in the hospital. One was when I got out of the hospital. And sometimes I share the angel moment. Sometimes I don't. It depends on what time, how much time I have to tell my testimony. But when I was in ICU, we would read Psalm 91 every day, every night. My husband and I, we would read it and speak it over us, you know, and I was so full of joy and just happy and just loving God. And so I had this nurse that would come to me in the middle of the night, and she would come and she would fan me. She would cool me off. Now, okay, one of the things in the condition I was in, I had sweated so much that I had to get my sheets changed out often because I would just soak the sheets with sweat because I was, you know, in the condition I was in, it was just happening. And so this nurse would come in the middle of the night and she would just fan me. She had a fan and she would just fan me and cool me off. And we would have these amazing conversations about God. And we would talk about the scriptures that, you know, that encouraged us and just talk about God. We had just the best conversations. And she would come every night at the same time, around midnight, probably a little after midnight, at 1 or 2 in the morning, she would come. And so I just loved her. And I looked forward to her coming. And one night she had come and she had told me that she had to go. But that she would come back again. And so she had left, but she didn't come back again. And so I did my little call nurse thing because I wanted her to come back. And so I did my little call nurse thing. And another nurse that had been in there on and off, you know, that evening had come in. And I said, hi. I said, I was looking for my other nurse. I wanted to know, you know, if she was planning on coming back again. You know, I want to see her again. And my nurse was like, I'm your only nurse for tonight. And I said, no, there's another nurse. She comes every night and she comes and she fans me. And as I'm speaking it, I said, she comes and she fans me and we talk about the Lord. And my natural nurse is shaking her head. And she's like, I'm your only nurse, which is I've been the only one in here tonight. And I was like, oh, okay. I said, you're the only one so you're the only one that's been in here tonight. And she's like, yeah. And I said, okay. And so she leaves and I'm like, what nurse fans you?
She must have wondered about you. Well, and did you catch the nurse's name, the angel's name?
I didn't catch her name. I didn't catch, like, I vaguely remember her face. I just went, she wore scrubs. She looked like a nurse. She had dark hair and it was pulled back. I remember she was, you know, she was young. She was beautiful, but not like amazing beautiful, like, you know, like she's glowing and she's, you know, like, you know, she looked normal. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? She just looked like a normal, beautiful girl, young. And just, you know, we would just have good conversation. So in the morning, I told my husband about what happened. And he says, I know what you're talking about. He says, because in the middle of the night, he says, I could hear you guys talking.
He heard her.
And he says, I heard her too. And she would encourage me too. And he said that, because he was sleeping on a cot next to me. And so he was always there sleeping, laying down. And he says, but he could hear her. And I was like, oh my gosh. And I said, this is an angel. And after that night, she never came back again. You know, and I thought about it.
That you're aware of.
That I'm aware of. But you know what's funny? Jesus said that he would come back again soon too. And we're still waiting for him to come back.
There you go. Yeah.
She said she would be back again soon. And so anyway. Yeah. So I was just like, whoa, that was an angel. The encouragement and the strength she gave me to continue in faith. And it was just amazing. So after 2 weeks of being in the hospital or in ICU, they decide to go do an ultrasound on my leg again to check to see what that blood clot is doing. And to their surprise, it was completely gone.
Of course.
And I know it was because, you know, we had a lot of people, we had our church praying for us. We had a lot of prayer groups praying for us. We were praying. So it's just the power of prayer, you know, believing God for miracles and the impossible. So it was completely gone. And when the nurse came, or not the nurse, but when the doctor came to me and said, you know, well, the ultrasound shows that the blood clot is completely gone. And I said, really? I said, what do you think happened? And she's like, I don't know. She says, it might have been the heparin, because they had me on a light blood thinner. They didn't put me on a heavy blood thinner because I was pregnant. They didn't want it to affect the baby. So they had told me that it wouldn't take the tumor away, that it would only keep it from getting bigger. And so she's like, I don't know, maybe the heparin worked. And I said, no. I said, this was God. I said, this is impossible.
Yeah.
And she's like, well, this does make things less complicated. She says, I'm happy it's gone. She felt that at this time, this is the time we should go in and get the baby. And so we decided.
What are you, about 30 weeks at this point?
I was 31. Well, yeah, I think I was 30 or 31. I had my daughter at 32 weeks. So we scheduled her delivery, I think a week or 2 weeks at that point, because they wanted the baby to have some time to grow. They felt 32 weeks was a good time to take her out. And so, so they told me the complications that could happen with taking her out, and that, that I could die. I could lose too much blood and die. they just really didn't know what was going to happen. They decided not to take the tumor out at the same time of taking the baby out. They felt take the baby out first and then 2 months, give me 2 months to heal and then go back in and get the tumor. And so their focus was only getting the baby out.
You had said that was because they didn't want you to bleed to death.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They didn't want me. They felt that I would bleed to death if they did both. The sun's hitting me. Let me get the blinds. Let's see. It's a little better, I think.
It's so great because it's dark here. It's nighttime. So it's lovely to see the sunshine on your end.
Yeah, it's the sun here is really intense too. Being in the desert, I didn't realize. It's intense. So they go in and they give me, you know, plan A, plan B, plan C, plan D situation, like, you know, plan D being worst case scenario. And it was pretty, gruesome what could happen if things didn't go the way they should go. But they went in, they got her, and they said she came out and she immediately started crying on her own, which they had thought that they were going to need to help her, you know, take breaths. She took breaths on her own and she was completely healthy. They weren't sure what they were going to find. They had thought that maybe some of her limbs wouldn't work properly because of how compressed they were against the tumor. And everything, she was perfect. She was
praise
perfect.
God. Yeah.
Yeah. And
what a miracle. You have so many miracles attached to your story.
Yeah. And one of the things that they were concerned about is my uterus not contracting after having the baby. That's something that is really important, that the uterus begins to contract after you have the baby, because if it doesn't, you can bleed to death. And so they said that my uterus was contracting like it was supposed to. And so I didn't bleed to death. And they said that it went better than plan A, better than what they even expected.
Of course.
Like it was just so simple and so easy. So I still had this tumor. And now I had a baby. And so it was very challenging. My baby was in NICU for a month and a half, so that she could grow properly and breathe properly, being a preemie.
And that was probably a blessing for you too, because you could recover and prepare for your next surgery. Yeah. Because I'm in my head thinking what that would have been like to try to take care of an infant and... Oh. You know, yeah, it would have been.
I was in a really weird hormonal state as well. I felt like, you know, I didn't see my baby until 3 days after they took her out. So it was almost like I didn't feel like I had this connection with her. It was really weird because, you know, it's like, oh, here's your baby. And after 3 days of not even seeing her or whatever, and then not having her, not going through the labor and having her, it was almost like, is that my baby? Like,
Why did they wait so long? I didn't hear that part of your story before. Why did they make you wait 3 days to see her?
Because of the condition I was in. I had just went through major surgery. I mean, they cut me all the way from top here all the way down. I was stapled up. I had a huge tumor. I was just in a really not in a good condition to even hold the baby, to even have the baby, you know, by my side. I didn't even have like her by my side. And when I went to go see the baby, I was still in the hospital. They wheeled me in a wheelchair to her, you know, and I'm not feeling, you know, the best. And so I'm seeing her and I'm crying because I'm like, how am I supposed to take care of this baby? Like, I'm just not in a good condition. It was very overwhelming for me. Mm-hmm. It was just overwhelming. And my husband was kind of like, why aren't you, you know, like, we have a baby. Like, why aren't you taking to her? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, I don't know why I'm having a hard time bonding with her. And so I know it wasn't the condition. I had to really pray that through because it was just a really weird time. 2 weeks later, I got out of the hospital and we stayed at the Ronald McDonald House there, which is a place for people who have children in hospitals. And so since my child was in NICU and it was close to the hospital, we stayed there because we lived in Riverside. We didn't live in Los Angeles. So it was kind of a distance. So we stayed close. But when I was at the Ronald McDonald House, I still felt like I wasn't ready to be out of the hospital. It was very hard for me to get around and move around, which leads me to my next angel story, if you want to hear it.
Yes, I absolutely want to see. And I know we'll have to wrap up soon, but your story is so riveting. I don't even care about the time. And I know that everybody that's listening is just blown away. So, because I know there are other stories, there's more to it that I remember.
There's so many details I'm leaving out, how God is, just what he's done all throughout. I mean, I'm trying to get through this as quick as I can.
But there's peace is great. And I think the way that you're sharing it is beautiful. So
okay,
no worries.
Good. Okay, perfect. Okay. So I'm at the Ronald McDonald House, you know, I'm still struggling, you know, just with having this tumor. I have my period because, you know, that happens after you have a baby. And the period, it was kind of long. It was just a long period. And it was very hard because this tumor was so huge. So in the middle of the night, I would have to get up to change myself. And I couldn't get up on my own. Laying down, it was very hard for me to get out of bed. And so in the middle of the night, when I would wake up to change myself, or when it was time for me to change myself, I would be lifted up. Like I would have someone, and it felt like someone on one side and someone on the other side, holding my shoulders and lifting me up. My husband was asleep. When he was awake, he would always like help pull me up. But in the middle of the night, he was sleeping and I would feel this push up, this presence up. And I would sit up and I was still like not good. Like I was still just, it was just really hard. And I would hear in the spirit how much that these angels, I realized now that they were angels. At the time, I didn't register that they were. It wasn't until like a week really that they kept doing this and that I started registering, oh my gosh, this is an angelic presence that is lifting me up every night, helping me get to the bathroom and bringing me back. But they would speak to me and they would tell me how much God loved me, how much he loved me, how much he loved heaven. Heaven's my daughter's name. How much how much God loved my heaven, my daughter, how he had a future and a plan for us. And that God was going to do amazing things through us. And that he loved us so much and that we were going to be okay. That was something that was really comforting. They would say, you're going to be okay. You're going to be okay. And that he loves you. He loves you. And that he has a future for you. He's got a big plan for you. And it was just speaking this comfort. And, you know, you could just feel the presence of the Lord and just hear these angels and how I knew that they were angels and not the Lord, because there is a difference, is how they spoke to me. It was, you know, he loves you. He cares about you. He's, you know, I just remember he loves you. You're going to be okay. He's got a plan for you. Those were the things that they kept encouraging and saying to me. So every night I get lifted up and I would sit there. When I started realizing that they were, that this was angelic, I started saying, thank you. And I was like, thank you, thank you, thank you so much. Thank you. I kept saying, thank you, thank you, thank you so much. Yeah, it was like for a week that I had that angelic insistence. And it's funny because I remember telling my friends, well, one of my friends who came to visit me, I was telling her and I said, I know this sounds crazy. I said, and she came to visit me at the Ronald McDonald House. And I said, I know this sounds crazy. And I said, but, you know, I told her what I just said right now. And I kept crying. And she was crying too. And she's like, God is so good. And I said, God is so good. He is so, so good. Oh my gosh, he is so good. You know, for him to send his angels to help me. And we just started worshiping and praising the Lord right then and there of how good he is to do that for us. And to allow me to like recognize it too. Like, you know, I think we have angelic assistance all the time.
Oh yeah.
But we don't recognize it or we don't, you know, see it. And in that moment, he helped me to see that. So
I love that. And it'll have to be food for another day, but I've had an experience like that too, where he confirmed an angel that was helping me, which is amazing. But the thing is, you in this moment, you still have this very real tumor that you're dealing with. Mm-hmm. And what, you're like a month and a half out from being able to have that removed.
So there's a lot of stories in between there, but I will not go there, although they're pretty miraculous. I don't know if I should share one of them. I don't know.
Well, do it.
So I finally get to take heaven home, and So I had her for about a week and I noticed that she was very lethargic. So the day before, I took her for a doctor's visit and the nurse said it was time for her vaccines. And I said, don't you think she's kind of young for vaccines just yet? And she was like, oh no, you know, we give vaccines all the time to the babies at this age. And I said, but she's only 5 pounds. She was only 5 pounds at the time. And because when she was born, she was 3 pounds. So she had gained 2 pounds and we're holding that weight. And I said, but she's only 5 pounds. And she says, oh no, it's safe. You know, we do this with everybody. So me, you know, I should have just went with mama instinct and just would have said, no, let's wait. But then I thought, well, you know, everybody, you know, every baby gets vaccines, you know, like I just didn't see any problem with vaccines at that time because I'd never heard of any adverse.
Right. At that time. And we've learned a lot since then, haven't we?
Yes. Yeah. So at the time,
we've all lived through vaccines.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So after she got her vaccines, I noticed that she was super lethargic. Like she just was floppy. And I thought, okay, you know, she just got her vaccines. You know, it's probably just working through her system. She'll be okay. So I went home, you know, and then the next day I noticed she's still super lethargic, just really floppy. And I was like, okay, she's going to be okay. You know, it's going to be okay. So I fed her, this was in the afternoon sometime, and I fed her and I put her down to go to sleep, to take a nap. I go into the kitchen to make a sandwich. I'm making a sandwich and all of a sudden I hear this horrible croaking noise. It was like, awful. And it sounded like an adult. It didn't sound like a baby. It was an awful croaking noise. And so I was like, what was that? So I go over to her. And she is completely blue. And I was like, oh my gosh. So I go to pick her up. And when I pick her up, she's lifeless. And there's a difference between holding a live baby and a lifeless baby. She was lifeless. And I was like, oh my gosh. So I put her down and I was like, no, no, no. I said, you will live and you will not die. You will live and you will not die. And I just, Jesus, Jesus, please help Jesus, Jesus. I said, and you will live and you will not die. And I was rubbing her tummy and her feet at the time, because in the NICU, they had told me if she, you know, if I noticed that she had light breathing or if she didn't seem like she was breathing, to do that and it would stimulate her. So I was doing that to her, but she was just completely, she wasn't responding at all. So I just kept calling out to Jesus. I'm like, Jesus, Jesus, help, Jesus, help. And then I just kept commanding her. I was like, you will live and you will not die. And honestly, I don't know how that came out of me. Like I really believe it was the Spirit of God at that moment giving me the words to say, because I didn't think about calling 911. I just was focused on like, let's get this taken care of in the spirit, I guess. I don't know. And so then at the last, you will live and you will not die. All of a sudden she opened her eyes and she took a deep breath. She went, and then she went back to that lifeless state again, but this time with her eyes open. And then I said, no, 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 you will live and you will not die. And I picked her up and I pulled down. Oh, no, no, no. That's not what happened. So this time her eyes were open after she took that breath. She went back to that lifeless state. And again, I said, no, no, no. I said, you will live and you will not die. And I just kept calling out to Jesus. And she took another breath again this time. And that time I picked her up and I pulled down her pants and I just started spanking her to get more breath into her. And she ended up breathing and she came back to me. So that was, I knew that was the enemy trying to take her life. We now know vaccines are not from God.
No.
If I would have done things differently then and after that,
I would have, you know, and I would have as well. And but yeah. For the grace of God, my children lived through them.
Yeah. And yeah, and you know, there's so many vaccine injured, you know, children out there too. I know some of them, and I'm just so grateful that she didn't get injured like a lot of these other children have gotten injured, because I mean, she almost died. And so I feel like
she may have.
And I think she died and she got raised back to life. Yeah, she got raised back to life.
Yeah, that's what I think too. That's what it sounds like. And well, you know, God was going to be in the miracle all the way through. And will continue to be, and he has plans for her. My goodness.
Right. Well, you know, that was super encouraging that the angel, the angelic visitation that I had, he has a plan, you know, he's got a future and a plan for you guys.
Right.
Which is like the enemy could not take her at that point, you know, even though she was dead. And you know what? I had read after the whole incident that croaking noise, when somebody croaks after dying, that means all their vital organs have shut down and that they're dead. After they croak, it's like, it's done. It's over. And that croaking noise was so awful. And so, like I said, it sounded like an adult. It did not sound like a baby at all. That the Lord, you know, brought her back to me, and he's going to fulfill his promise.
He sure is. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, that's an incredible part of your story, Natalie. I just cannot, I have so many things to say. But so then you go and you have, that's not the end of your miracles.
No. So
all of it just is so impressive.
So we'll get to the final removal of the tumor. We're finally there. So I go in for surgery to finally get the tumor removed. What they thought would be a 5-hour surgery ended up being just an hour and a half. They didn't know what they were going to, they didn't know what they were going to find, after removing that tumor. They, a lot of my vital organs were compromised because of the tumor. And so they didn't know what would be damaged, what would not be damaged, what if things would be rearranged. Because every time I had an ultrasound, it was like my right kidney was on my left side and my left kidney was like up in the front somewhere. Like everything was like always being rearranged. And they would tell me that when they did the ultrasounds. And so they didn't know what they were going to find. And so they ended up taking out that tumor, and they thought they were going to have to really, you know, work to get that tumor out. But they said it was like the tumor was just laying there. They were able just to pluck it out like nothing. And they plucked it out, and they said that all my organs were in their perfect place. And they said that they sat there and they watched for 30 minutes to make sure each organ was functioning properly as it should. And they said every organ was doing exactly what it was supposed to do. And they said it was beautiful. It was beautiful. It was like healthy and beautiful. And they even said my skin bounced back. And they'd never seen skin bounce back like that before. I have no stretch marks, if you can believe that. They weighed that tumor, and that tumor weighed 18 pounds.
Wow.
That's how big it was. And if you think about, you know, just a big baby is about 10 pounds. You know, I had a baby and a 18-pound tumor all together. They sewed me back up. And then I got to go home and recover, and that's the end.
That is such a beautiful story. I have tears in my eyes again. It just never ceases to impress me. Didn't I tell you, people who are listening and watching, how many times, Natalie, over the past couple of years, when I've needed faith for something, and I think if I could just have Natalie's faith, if we could just have the faith that you demonstrated, that you heard the voice of the Lord and you believed the blessing and you didn't give up and you suffered so much and never lost that hope. It's so amazing. I just think if everyone on the planet could hear your story, they would have a different perspective about life and about our God who doesn't break his promises and who honors blessings and who just will never give up on us. So we should never give up on waiting for him. And it's just so difficult sometimes to do that. But if you can do it, boy, the rest of us can do it. And I just think about heaven and what a calling she has on her life and what she must be thinking, you know, that you gave her life. You fought for her life. You heard the Lord clearly and you didn't give up. So I think, you know, no matter what we're hearing, God's voice should trump everything.
Amen. Amen.
What a great story.
The key to really staying in faith is always keeping in prayer. Bring to the Lord everything. Don't think you know what to do, because sometimes you think you know what to do in the moment. Talk to him about everything. Always, you know, go to the Word. Keep yourself encouraged. Watch other testimonials. That was something that always encouraged me. Watching testimonials. I was always on CBN. Like, what's the next testimonial? Because it does encourage. Like, if the Lord can do it for them, he can do it for me. I would read books like Smith Wigglesworth and John G. Lake.
Which I bought those books. I hadn't heard of them when I talked to you. And now, oh my gosh, the things that Smith Wigglesworth writes about.
I know.
And his quotes are just fantastic. And we live in that world.
Yeah.
It's still ours.
And honestly, if it wasn't for reading those books, especially Smith Wigglesworth, I don't know if I would have been able to pray over heaven the way I did when she was completely lifeless. Like, I think it was his books that just, like, gave me the courage and the permission to just go and raise this one back to life. You know, you will live and you will not die. And, you know, it's just something that Smith Wigglesworth would do. But, you know, it does, it gets into
authority. I love
that authority. Because I don't know if I would have had that authority if I didn't see it or I didn't read it and didn't see it.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, with Smith Wigglesworth, I guess I was seeing it, you know, as I was reading it. Yeah. And if I didn't have that picture, maybe I wouldn't have known what to do in that state.
But you know, and I will just share, you know, one of the things that I've always contended for, and I still believe, like, with all my being, and this is the promise that the Lord gave me, is my dad was killed in a commercial plane crash. Mm-hmm. And back when I used to fly doing traffic, I had my own emergency landings, and then took a morning off one day and lost a colleague and a pilot, and just there was a series of this stuff going on. And fast forward to Kansas City, and I'm putting my daughter on a flight to go back home to San Diego, and she's 14 at the time, and she's concerned, and I'm telling her, no, we don't have to worry. And I said, Lord, just don't let it ever happen again. And when I start praying that, there's a full rainbow that appears over her plane that's parked at the gate, and there's no clouds, there's no rain. It's the most wild thing. And there's a flight attendant standing there. And I said, look at that. She said, that is unbelievable. And I said, I'm going to tell you, I think that's for me because my dad was killed in a commercial plane crash and my daughter is on that flight. And she says, I have chills. Like, we both felt the electricity in the room. And I just knew right then and there, I just knew without a shadow of a doubt that this was my promise to me, that he was going to protect me. And so whenever I fly, like, I love to fly now. I love it because I've actually been on flights where people have screamed when the turbulence hits and the plane is falling. And I'm so confident in the Lord's promise to me and to my family, as far as flying is concerned. So it's like you, like, it's a promise, but now that promise has become prophecy for me that we are good flying. Our flights are so calm. I was on one flight not too long ago where it did get a little rocky, and I just took authority over it. And I said, it's going to be peaceful the rest of the flight. And in fact, I did that once when my daughter was flying, and she's texting me, Emily, and she's telling me, yeah, it's really rough. And I said, well, it won't be anymore. And I totally took authority over that. And she said, yeah, she says the rest of the flight was completely smooth. So I just know that someone needs to hear your story and that it has blessed someone today. Natalie, it's just so fantastic. And I just can't hear it enough. It's always good.
God is good. He's
faithful.
He's faithful.
And he is. And I just can't underscore the need for us to tell our stories. I mean, I know that you know that. I know that most people listening know that. But there are some that still haven't really wrapped their minds around the importance of sharing testimony that could impact someone else's decisions. So here I am, always thinking about you as my shining example of faith. It's so good. And your husband's in ministry, so you're in the perfect place to share all of that.
Yeah. Amen. Yeah. God is good. He is good. I'm glad it encouraged you.
Yes. Yes. And thank you for coming back on the show. I really appreciate you taking the night off. And I know you need to get to doing your dinner with the family. Is there anything else you want to say before I let you go?
No, just, you know, God is faithful, that you can trust him. You can trust him, and don't feel like you have to figure it out. Just let him take you where he wants to take you.
Amen. Thank you, Natalie Valkersel, and thank you the rest of us, rest of us. Thanks for joining us today. I appreciate you, and may your day be filled with color and many blessings. Until next time, thanks for joining us on Color Speaks.